Now, if you think of cities with a fascinating building tradition, you might think of great cities of Europe, such as Paris, London, Rome, New York even. But what about Chicago? Well, gangsters and stockyards might come to mind. But now let's join writer Colin Bissett as he discovers Chicago's wealth of buildings through the way its citizens think about them.
At the airport, a stern-looking immigration officer asks the purpose of my visit to Chicago. When I reply, to see its buildings, her face softens and she nods, "Yeah, great buildings," before quickly stamping my passport. I'm obviously not a threat to the country if I care about its architecture. Everyone I meet in Chicago seems to care about it too. I can't think of another modern city where its architecture lies so much at the forefront of its character. Following the fire of 1871 that burned for 2 days and devastated the centre of the city, the rebuilding had a peculiar advantage, where the latest technology, electric lifts, steel frames, was taken up by a forward-thinking group of architects, creating buildings that became blueprints for those that followed across America. The first skyscrapers are here, demonstrating a daring confidence in all things modern, even when softened by Beaux-Arts finishes. Louis Sullivan's decorative flourishes adorn many of the city's finest buildings, and in his practice the young Frank Lloyd Wright found a voice. His buildings are found throughout the city, but especially in Oak Park, where his signature prairie houses stand out as fresh and modern as anything built today. And it seems almost accidental good fortune that Ludwig Mies van der Rohe landed here in 1938, having fled the Nazi purges that had closed the Bauhaus. Chicago has so many examples of his work that it seems almost greedy. Throw in more recent work by Renzo Piano and Frank Gehry, and the numerous first-grade office buildings by Skidmore, Owings and Merrill, and walking the streets of Chicago is not unlike walking through a book on the history of modern architecture. I hardly know where to start, and that's where the Chicago Architecture Foundation comes in. I join a tour of 2 hours that looks at skyscrapers after 1950, and before long I'm developing skyscraper neck, the pain caused by constantly looking upwards. I sign up for more tours. A 2-hour cruise takes in the major landmarks that line Chicago's looping river, passing what was once the largest building on earth, the Merchandise Mart of 1931. Before a tour of Mies van der Rohe's campus for the Illinois Institute of Technology, I skip out to see Wright's Roby House, after Falling Water, his most famous domestic building. And on the way I come across other treasures, like the elaborate mansions on the lakefront at Evanston. Catching my breath, I arrange to talk with Jennifer Mason-Garb, Senior Manager of Educational Research at the Chicago Architecture Foundation.
This is a city that thinks about architecture, that talks about architecture, that is incredibly proud of its architectural heritage. It's in the blood, it's in the air, it's a sport, I think, in some ways, too, here. We have baseball and football and basketball, but architecture, I think, is the sport. There's not too much that goes up in the city, new or renovated or demolished, that doesn't get talked about. And that's really wonderful, I think, that you can walk down Michigan Avenue, our main sort of spine, our main street here in Chicago, and you can eavesdrop on two people on their lunch break. Do you like that thing? I don't like that thing. What do you think of that new, you know, skyscraper going up?
Can I ask you about the Chicago Architecture Foundation?
Yes.
How did it come into being? What's its history?
We're coming up on our 50th birthday. 2016 will be our 50th anniversary. We actually began as a different organization than we are today in terms of our mission. We began just as a group of volunteers in the late 60s. A group of architectural enthusiasts, architects, also banding together to save H.H. Richardson's Glessner House. It was an important late Victorian sort of era house, 1880s, and it was threatened by demolition by neglect, And so this group got together and said, no, I think this building's worth saving. And so they started offering tours of the building to raise money. And 40 some years later, here we are. And we offer today about 90 different types of tours. Not 90 tours, 90 different kinds of tours. We are now an organization with a much broader purpose to educate the public on to be inspired on why design matters. And we do that not only through our tours, that's probably how we're best known, but we also do that through lectures, through public programs.
And you were telling me about a project called right. discoverdesign.org.
It's our new digital learning tool, and it's designed to connect teens, teachers, and architects around the country or around the world for project-based learning around architecture. So teens are choosing a design project that we post online. All of the design projects happen to be about their school. And so the student is solving the design problem, but solving it not just sort of here's, ta-da, my final drawing, my final rendering, my final model, but we want to see all the messiness of it. We want to see the design process. We want to see their thinking. The architect wants to see that. But we also recognize that these kinds of critical thinking, creativity, skills that we look at in the 21st century are applicable across disciplines. I mean, I think we serve sort of two audiences in many ways here at the Architecture Foundation. We certainly serve the German tourist or who's coming, or the tourist from Ohio or whatever the case may be. But we also really want to engage with the city and the residents here, and a lot of that has to do with how do we provide them with a deeper look at their own city, of things that maybe they just take for granted or drive past and walk past and don't really understand.
What are people most interested in?
Frank Lloyd Wright. Insatiable sort of desire, I think, to learn about Wright. There's also, I think, a wider, broader understanding over the years to sort of look at how these buildings are changing society, how they did change society in 1880s, 1890s. You know, we have some of the first skyscrapers in the world here. What did that mean as this new building type for a society? Who built them? Why were they built? What do you mean they weren't built to last forever? The craftsmanship that went into it, what was a life like for an office worker? I think those are questions that we're starting to wrestle with.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thanks. Come back again.
A few days later, I leave Chicago as a mist rolls over the city from the lake, with the John Hancock Tower and the Sears Tower, the tallest in America, oddly sunlit as they emerge through the mist, a touch of Venice even then. It seems like a suitable last vision of a city that has stunned me with its surprising beauty. What remains stronger, though, is an image of a modern city where the people really care what their built environment looks like.
Colin Bissett there, and the architecture of Chicago.